Light Orchestra combines Celtic music, interactive lights, Irish dancing, and fun. Pre-show attendees are invited to participate in the magical music petting zoo, where they can touch and play instruments that inspire the creative mind. Again, that's the Katie Jane and Celtic Light Orchestra performance on Saturday, January 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Community Music Center, 3350 Southeast Francis Street in Portland. This is an all-ages show. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Add him on now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is John Weber. He's the new executive director at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, John.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You've been here before, back in the day when you worked at the Portland Art Museum.
Yep.
And who was your interviewer back then?
Lois Allen was doing Arts Focus, in those days.
Back in... Lois Allen wrote a book about contemporary Northwest art, which is still in Powell's. So thank you for coming back. I wanted to talk to you about the museum in Eugene, because I tend to go when I'm passing through Eugene, because I'm going to Southern Oregon, and it's only 10 minutes off the freeway. But I think Portlanders might need a reminder of the riches of that museum and why they should go there. And it's also a beautiful setting. So just give us an introduction to this, the U of O's museum.
Thanks, Joseph. And it's great to be here. Yeah, the museum at U of O has been around for a long time, close to 90 years now. But it underwent a real transformation in 2005. It reopened with new galleries, and over the last decade, it's really had a renaissance. We have a permanent collection of around 14,000 works of art. Our traditional strength is in East Asian art, the arts of China, Japan, and Korea, and we have permanent galleries that are devoted to work from those countries, both traditional work and contemporary work. We also have large holdings of work by Northwest artists, and we've been doing quite a bit with contemporary art over the last, more than a decade, but in particularly over the last decade or so. So we have a lot going on. We have a lot of work that comes through by major private collectors. For example, right now we have tremendous paintings by Mark Bradford on view, an internationally celebrated artist working out of L.A. And so there's always a lot happening at the museum. It's really exciting. I had not been back for a number of years and came back as I was researching this job and was really blown away by the quality of the work in the galleries, the range, and just the whole scale of the operation. Mm-hmm. We have around 60,000 visitors a year. We're an academic museum, too, so we work with faculty across the curriculum, 40 to 45 different departments in a given year. We work with faculty, and around 8,000 to 9,000 students a year use the museum as part of their coursework. So we're really extremely embedded, yes.
So not just art students?
No, not just art students.
What would a chemistry student do or a history student?
Well, history students could easily be looking at historical issues, contemporary issues that are relevant to history. We have students who might be looking at contemporary art that gets into social and legal issues. The Carrie Mae Weems show that we have coming up is a great example of a show that could be used really across the curriculum. This coming year, there's a book that all the students will be reading, and it's going to be announced soon. It's about environmental issues and how they impact people, and so we'll be doing a show working with faculty involved in environmental issues. And we've been doing this every year, and so we have really hundreds and thousands of students who come through for that. A few years back, the reading was Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, and we had a show of contemporary work by African-American artists, and a great show used by thousands of students.
Mm-hmm. So just to clarify, we now in Portland have a Jordan Schnitzer Museum. It's at PSCU, just opened a few months ago. There's another one in Pullman, Washington. It's also called the Jordan Schnitzer. And then you are called the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art. So what's the connection? Do you share his collection, or, you know, how independent are you?
Jordan is very generous with sharing his collection. He shares it not only with us, but with museums around the country, really substantial shows coming around the United States from his collection. We'll actually be showing a number of works by the contemporary artist Roger Shimomura that are from his collection, both prints and paintings, in a show that's opening up in February. But really, his collection and the museums are separate entities. He gave naming donations for each of those museums, but it's not that we're there specifically to show his collection. That's an opportunity, not an obligation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I was there just after Thanksgiving, I actually went on the day of the Civil War so I could get in and out with no traffic, because it was like 1 o'clock. And I saw the Ralph Steadman retrospective. So he's the British illustrator who worked on Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and a number of these books. And then, but he also showed the whole range of his work from the 60s and the 50s, drawing for British magazines and up to his later days. And it was in this huge room upstairs, and it was just such a great show. I felt like, wow, this could be in any big city. Mm-hmm. It was really good. And how do things like that come to the doorstep of your museum?
Well, that's a show that the previous director, Jill Hartz, brought because she felt, I think very correctly, that it would be of great interest to the audiences in Eugene. It's a show that has a lot of contemporary issues, social issues, environmental issues there. There's one cycle of works that are about, it's about the species extinction that's going on right now. Early works that are his cartoons. Of course, the collaborations with Hunter Thompson are known to a lot of people. He did an illustration for Through the Looking Glass early in his career, really wonderful drawings. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of teachable moments in that show. And there's also a certain kind of countercultural edge to the work that's very much there. So it seemed like a great show for a university and also a great show for Eugene audiences. And of course, he's internationally famous too. Mm-hmm. So he's a major figure in contemporary illustration and comics, and he's got just a real edge to the work. You know, he's deep into his 80s now, so he couldn't come to be here, but we had a wonderful Skype interview with him mm-hmm. in his studio in England, and that was really great. He and his daughter were pulling up drawings. She runs the foundation, and that's a show that's been touring around the country. So.
Did you record that Skype thing and then show it, or did you play it live?
I believe that's online. I'll have to be corrected on that if not, uh-huh. but we did record it, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it was just such a great thing. But there's always like 8 or 9 shows going on at any one time.
Oh, yeah. We have 23,000 square feet of galleries. So there's a lot happening at any given time. Eight different shows usually. Mm-hmm.
So what's coming up? And then tell us how you're going to sort of change the programming as you get your feet in your desk.
The shows that are coming up, Carrie Mae Weems' show opens up on January the 18th, and this is a traveling show that's coming.
What's it called?
It's called The Usual Suspects, and it's from the museum at Louisiana State University. There was a retrospective of Weems' work at the Portland Art Museum, I think 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. a traveling retrospective, and this is work that's happened since that time. It's looking a lot at killings of black men and women by the police, and about the problem, Black Lives Matter issues, and there's both photography and text and video in it. And she's going to be coming to the university to get an honorary degree, an honorary doctorate. And so we're working on that show together with the president's office, and she'll be coming at the end of April, 23rd and 24th, and doing a public lecture. And it's great to bring Carrie Mae back. She's from Oregon originally, from Portland, of course, as I think the Portland art world knows, the Oregon art world. And it's really going to be wonderful to have her back. She and I were in grad school together at UC San Diego in the early 80s, so our paths have crossed many times over the years. And this is another show that I didn't bring, but I feel very fortunate that we're having.
You didn't influence this one.
No, I didn't influence it, but when I found out it was happening, I was very happy about it, because she's a significant contemporary artist, MacArthur Genius Award winner. She's in collections all over the country and internationally, and it's an honor to be having the work
at
U of O.
So these are a lot of... color stills, a lot of them, but a lot of them are like blurry, people in hoodies with their faces kind of masked out with big colored rectangles. It does, and there's lots of video taken from like police car, you know, dash cam stuff. This is all new stuff following on from what we saw in Portland
yes.
a few years ago.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So this is kind of like her cutting edge statement about
It's,
you know, this decade.
It's obviously highly political. It's also highly conceptual. And as you say, it's also very poetic. And the video that'll be in the show also has a much more sort of a poetic vibe to it. And she's a powerful artist. And it's impossible to understand the emotional impact of this kind of work until you're with the actual objects. It's one thing to see it small on a computer screen or in a book, and it's another thing to see it in the room. And
so
that's
these videos are big, right? They're like bigger than humans on the wall.
It'll be about 6 feet high, the video projection.
And then there's sort of these incantations, sort of like a Greek chorus, people.
Yeah, that's the more poetic text.
Reading.
How do you measure a life, she asks.
Yeah.
And I just encourage people to come in to see it and also to come and hear her talk. We had her at UC Santa Cruz when I was there around the time of that traveling retrospective, and she gave one of the best artist talks that I've ever heard. It was interesting because she began the first 20 minutes talking about other artists' work and how it had influenced her, and then went in to talk about her own work and also some work that she was doing where she lives in Syracuse, New York, with youth in the area. And she's just a very deep thinker. And her work is always transforming itself, changing the material she uses, and hits a lot of different kind of notes. Sometimes it's laceratingly funny. Other times it's just humanly devastating, and she is great with form.
So you've known her decades, and she's kept up with technology and also this sort of proliferation of imagery. You know, there's no more working in the dark room, like sweating over print.
Right.
You can produce like dozens of pictures in minutes.
Yeah, well, art, one of the things that we've seen in the contemporary art world, I'd say over the past 40 to 50 years, is even though not all art is, quote, conceptual art, unquote, art today is very idea-driven and very driven by a desire to make, a public statement. Certainly there's a lot of work, too, which is very personal, quote, unquote. But art over the whole, let's go back thousands of years. Art is always about things that are important to a culture. It always remembers and discusses whatever a culture thinks is important. That might come as spiritual and religious matters. It might come, you know, on the walls of a cave in terms of hunting and survival. It might be about state power and kings or presidents or social movements. You know, it might be about, you know, in the case of China in the 70s, it's in the 60s, it's about the Cultural Revolution. And we have posters from the Cultural Revolution that are about that moment. At a certain time in what we think of as sort of modern society, it's more about the individual and about individual identity and exploring that. One of the things that we're seeing now is that art's becoming, again, as it really has been, I think, the last 30 years, a lot of art has been about, it's been about identity, the last 10 years more about migration, about moving across borders, about what that means, about who gets to move across borders, about the price they pay for that. And it's about things that are really, that really, really matter. And that's one reason why having a museum on a college campus is great, because you can, you can share that work with the general public from off campus, and you can teach it working in alliance with the faculty to the students. And it's a way to engage with our time. It's also a way to engage with other time periods. The museum, the Schnitzer Museum, the JSMA, as we call it in Eugene, we've got great collections from the history of China and Japan and Korea, but particularly from China. And so the museum can be almost a kind of time machine to go back to the Qing Dynasty and begin to try to understand what that culture was like, and by looking at more contemporary works, how it might relate to contemporary culture or might not relate to contemporary culture. But there's a lot of rich material there and a lot of just gorgeous, intense objects.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is John Weber. He is the executive director at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at the University of Oregon in Eugene. There's a one show downstairs now in Eugene at your place called Art of the Athlete, and it's about it's young people drawing themselves as athletes and showing what they wish they were, how they wish they were seen. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's, I mean, I really like that show because it wasn't sort of patronizing school kid art. It was like, here's a very defined thing. You know, this is your brief. Do it. You know, self-portrait. And they all come out different, and there's a bit of text with each one. I thought it was a really well-done show.
Yeah, well, there's some actually very good paintings in that show. I'm a big fan of school kid art, though, I have to say. But this is, as
Why?
You say,
Why do you like it?
It can be very free, and it can be very, very, especially really young kids are just very imaginative, and they haven't been told how they're supposed to represent something. So they represent something and things in ways you'd never expect. And then they get more sort of tighter and more disciplined, especially in high school, and want to make it look like the thing. Mm-hmm. And it gets almost too exacting. In the case of the Art of the Athlete, I think there's a lot of freedom there, too, and a lot of very interesting ways of for the students to look at themselves. And I agree that it's a very cool program.
The current show at the Portland Art Museum,
Hank Willis Thomas,
they let kids write some of the name cards, the descriptions of the art.
That's the KS MOCA program that Harold Fletcher here does.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they're the ones who wrote that.
Oh, okay.
And so that's actually an interesting project because it's an artist who is working with kids to engage with work by an adult with the consent of Hank Willis Thomas, obviously, in the museum. And I think that's a really intriguing project that Harold is doing there.
Tell us a bit more about Harold then. You two go way back, and you have Bay Area roots like him.
Yeah, well, I spent 11 years at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art when he was kind of coming up and working at CCA, and he was also an apprentice farmer at the UC Santa Cruz Organic Farm in the mid-1990s and trying to decide if he wanted to be an artist or a farmer, and decided to continue being an artist, but brought the notion of ecologies and interrelated social networks that you see in contemporary organic farming and looked at how that was related to art. And we did a big project with him at UC Santa Cruz when I was there before I came to my current position. And it was about looking at the university as a kind of collective museum. He said, you want to have a museum. You don't have one yet. What if the whole university is your museum? Mm-hmm. You have collections. You have teaching programs. What you don't have is signage, a catalog, and a website. So he worked with us to work on that.
So all the art was already there on walls, or was it just
hidden? It's not art. It's more natural features, science collections, the Grateful Dead archive. What Harold and two art collaborators, Nolan Kalish from Portland and Molly Sherman, did was to interview faculty, students, and alums and staff and ask what's important to you about this space. And then they would tell a story about it, and that became essentially like an artwork. That became a site of the collective museum, and the signage and the website and the catalog reflected all that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And was the idea that you would walk around like you're sort of in a big museum and look at
all over campus. It's 2,000 acres, And it goes literally from one end to the next of campus and all around. It's still there, too. People can go do it. There's a website which was done by actually a Portland programmer that Harold knew. And the website's still there. And if you look at IASCollectiveMuseum.com, you can find it.
Oh, okay.
And we'll be having Harold in a show in Eugene at the JSMA, the Halley Ford Fellows Show. He was one of the artists who received the Ford Fellowship. And we're doing a show featuring artists from Oregon this fall. And so we'll be working with Harold to do something that we're still talking to him about for that project. It's one of our upcoming big shows in the Barker Gallery.
Oh, okay. Tell us a bit about working at the museum, the Contemporary Museum in San Francisco, because you know, being at a big institution, did you find the art really? You got to show the art you really wanted to show.
Well, it's exciting. I was head of education and public programs and part of the curatorial staff. I've worked on a number of shows with curatorial teams. And it's very exciting. It was a moment of explosive growth. We went from the old building in the Veterans Administration building to the current location, and we opened up thinking we might have 400,000 visitors a year, and we ended up getting as many as 700,000 and 800,000 visitors a year.
Oh, wow.
We're doing a kind of a who's who list of artists from around the world and collecting a lot, you know, bringing in major works by Robert Rauschenberg, the Erase de Kooning drawing. We interviewed Rauschenberg about that, the story about that, and did my department did a lot of pioneering work in interactive educational technologies, putting artists on, at that time, CD-ROMs, and eventually on the Internet when the Internet speeded up to be able to do that. Early interviews with Glenn Ligon, for example, Richard Serra. It was really an exciting time to be there.
But as an institution, did you manage to make it move? You know, or did you feel like it was a living institution? It was changing with
very
the
much
times?
So. Oh, no, it was very dynamic. And, you know, it's even bigger now than it was. They expanded again a few years ago, and it's gotten really, really huge. And that's something that we were talking about a minute ago, is that the museums have been in a great growth trend for a number of years. I mean, we expanded. The JSMA is a lot bigger than it used to be, about 76,000 square feet altogether. And, you know, you mentioned the Barker Gallery. That's our biggest gallery. You know, it didn't exist 50 years ago, and this is happening all over the country.
Why are people going to see more difficult art, but it's not getting covered in the media?
Well, we wonder about that. We're very happy you're covering us. Again, I think art just speaks to our time, and it's, you know, museums, although you have to pay to get in, are relatively inexpensive compared to a lot of things. And art museums are actually less expensive than a lot of other museums. Science museums, for example, are more expensive than art museums. And I think people are wanting to understand who they are and who we are and what our culture is. And they're curious about other cultures. We interviewed people a lot at SF Moment. We do that at the JSMA in Eugene, too. And people are interested in learning. They're interested in seeing. They're interested in things that are new, and museums have those things. I think also in an era where more and more things are online, museums have real objects, you know, not virtual artifacts. It's connected to the hand of the artist and the culture that made it. There's an intimacy to the museum experience. It's also something you can do together. It's easy to talk. You're not in a loud room. It's easy to share ideas. You find out about the person that you're with. You know, what do you like? Oh, what do you see about that? It's a very social experience.
It is very much related to tourism. Like, people will drive thousands of miles to look at a monument that they've seen in books all their lives, just to be there. And I think it's the same with seeing, you know, a 3D object that they've heard about.
Yeah, and we've got some wonderful other shows coming up. Roger Shimomura, an artist born in Seattle. That'll be the big show in the Barker Gallery, and it's a number of works from Jordan Schnitzer's collection, both prints and paintings, seen in context with some works that are related to him. He's an artist whose work has looked a lot at the history of Japanese printmaking, ukiyo-e printmaking, only updating it, often with a very satirical eye. The work also looks at the history of incarceration of Japanese Americans during the Second World War, which he lived through. And so there's a real social edge there that he connects with current issues affecting Muslim Americans, for example, and how the United States has dealt with this problem of providing freedom and justice and full citizenship for everyone.
Does his work look like manga? Does it look like 17th century woodblock prints?
It's more pop related than anything else. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he literally puts pop images, you know, by Warhol or others inside his imagery. Mm-hmm. And so that's an exciting show that we have. We're opening a show by Claire Burbridge, who is an artist originally from the UK who's been in Ashland for a number of years, another Oregon artist that will be on view.
What does she do? What does she paint?
She does. Her work is very much about botanical and biological imagery, often very closely observed, very intimate, very, very delicate. And that show will be opening in January 2. And then we have a show of photographs, Still Life, which is a highlight show from our permanent collection of photography. So anyone who loves just beautiful silver gelatin print photography should want to see that. And then we're reopening our Soaring Gallery, which is where we show our Chinese arts. I'm going back a couple hundred years and more. Really, actually, there's some Paleolithic Chinese art in that, so thousands of years, shown in conjunction with contemporary Chinese and Chinese-American art. So it's a very interesting configuration. The gallery has been done in a major way for the first time in many years, and so the work, which is splendid in itself, is going to be shown even more gloriously than in the past. Mm-hmm. It'll be a good time. After that opens in mid-February, it will be a great time to come to the museum.
So it sounds like a very diverse offering. You know, there's always like several very different things going on.
Well, it's great to come once every 4 months, because then you see almost everything. But I understand that people don't always do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, my goal is to have people come at least, you know, 5 times a year. Mm-hmm. But you know, people need to go in there when they are moved to. Mm-hmm. We always have something great on view, though. There's no doubt about that.
So do you think there are more different kinds of art than there are different kinds of music?
I wouldn't say that. You know, humans are incredibly creative. And there's so many areas where you realize there's incredible creativity happening that you knew nothing about. I mean, there's so much to know and to see and to learn.
Mm-hmm. As you guide the museum forward, what are you going to strive to bring to it?
Well, we want to continue to be a really great academic museum, working with even more faculty and students in deeper ways. We're also looking at wanting to tour more shows nationally, originating projects of our own, and getting them around the country, and becoming even more national than we already are. We're already known as a superb academic museum with strong holdings, particularly in the East Asian area and the Northwest, and we want to build on those strengths and extend them.
Mm-hmm. So you'd maybe send an Asian show off to the East Coast or something?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right, and that would be worked on by your curators?
Yeah, or contemporary. I also want to bring in major work from outside. One of the projects that I'm working on right now is to bring a 10-screen video installation by Isaac Julian, the British filmmaker and video installation artist, and it deals with Frederick Douglass, the great American abolitionist. It's an amazing, incredible piece. It just is a 2019 piece.
Yeah.
We've never shown a piece like that at the JSMA, and it's just an amazing, amazing work.
What's
of
it
art.
Called?
It's called Lessons of the Hour, about Frederick Douglass.
Wow. I'll have to look it up on YouTube.
It's a year or two out, so don't. There's time. You'll hear more about it. Okay. We're working on a lot of other things too.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was John Weber. He's the new executive director at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Thanks for coming back to KBOO, John.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Andy Wawa looks a scream. Hand him on now, whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy Wawa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all.
Cable Community Radio holds open meeting concerning the operations and programming of Cable in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about Cable Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The KVU Board of Directors will meet Tuesday, January 28th at 6 p.m. instead of Monday for their January board meeting.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Chinatown's 5th Annual Lunar New Year Dragon Dance Parade on Saturday, January 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The New Year Dragon Dance Parade to celebrate the Year of the Rat begins at Northwest 3rd and Davis at 11:30 a.m. and ends at the Oregon Historical Society. Live afternoon performances and activities will begin at 1:30 p.m. Again, that's Portland Chinatown's 5th Annual Lunar New Year Dragon Dance Parade on Saturday, January 25th from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The parade begins at Northwest 3rd and Davis at 11:30 a.m. and the activities and performances begin at 1:30 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. Information about the parade route, performers, and sponsors can be found at kvu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
You are listening to Hindsight 2020, a day of special programming debriefing the last 3 years of the Trump regime.
What happened in international news, environmental issues, immigration, and LGBTQ rights? What are the most censored